Cozy up, because Now TV is all about the drama. Let Anthony Hopkins introduce you to Westworld's charming killer hosts. And I'm simply dying to see season 7 of Fox's The Walking Dead. Feeling the chill? Get steamy, catching up on The Affair before it returns. Search Now TV for the latest shows and over 250 box sets, all with no contract. Now TV, now you can.
18 plus, UK only. Month passes auto-renew. Cancel at any time. Full terms at nowtv.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Big Dog Hunt, Week 7 NFL in the books. Joe Stazak along with my man Steve Callis. Callis Remarks with Joe Stazak and Steve Callis. And here he is, the man of the hour. Steven, how are you doing, my friend?
Good, Joe. Always good to do this with you. Looking forward to it.
Always a pleasure, my friend. I love the I know you have emotion in there somewhere, but always very steady as she goes. Very, you know, don't get too high, don't get too low. You were born to do this, my friend, and it's always a pleasure talking to you. We're going to hit NFL first, and, of course, we're going to talk a little MLB and wrap up that season with the awards towards the end. And, of course, one of us had an amazing run, if you will, picking games last week. We'll get to that also in a little bit. Let's talk NFL. Steven, week 11 in the books, and, you know, along with all those Cowboy teams that won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, this current team set a franchise record with their 9th straight win over Baltimore on Sunday. Dak Prescott, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. First game, Tony Romo playing the backup. You know, at some point, I mean, I just don't believe that much in this team. I think they're good. Don't get me wrong, they're good. I don't think they're a juggernaut. I think I'm waiting for the stumble. Is it coming, or is this team that good and that steady?
Well, I think they're good. I don't think the entire NFC is that good, with the exception of a few teams. I mean, there's no stellar teams when you look at it, actually. Besides Dallas, there's only one other real team, Seattle. I think they're better than Dallas.
Yep,
but, you know, I just don't think the NFC as a group, and we often joke about the NFL as a national being the MFL as in mediocre. I've written that for years, the mediocre football league at times. And I think a lot of these teams are mediocre. And I just but look, they have all the makings. You know, the days of yesteryear have that strong offensive line, so you can run the ball, so your quarterback looks much better as a play action passer, taking nothing away from Prescott. Elliott's the real deal. Prescott's the real deal. But I think they're kind of, this is just my opinion now, protecting their defense. Again, not that their defense is bad at all, but they've been so dominant on the offensive side of the ball with a rushing game. They're not going out there throwing, you know, 6 passes to go 72 yards in a minute and 58. It's not one of those kinds of things. I think they have good ball possession. So, do I think they're for real? Yes. Do I think they're better than Seattle? No. But it is kind of amazing that those great Cowboy teams go, and if you go back far enough, even to Roger Staubach, never mind Aikman,
yes,
and Irvin, you know, that they never won 9
Irvin
in a row.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. And I guess it does make that Giant win in week 1 that much bigger. It's one of those after-the-fact things, oh, my goodness, the Giants beat them, because they almost lost to the Bears this week, and that's a whole separate story. But, yeah, Dallas is for real. Do I think they're winning the Super Bowl? No.
I would agree with you there. I think they're good. I do not think they are a juggernaut. Despite the 9 straight wins, I don't think they come close to those teams that you mentioned earlier back in the day. And, of course, we talked last week about the team 12-4 a couple years ago. I think that team is better. But,
right.
Speaking of that team, when Tony Romo was there and healthy, 12-4 they went, Romo kind of gave a heartfelt little diatribe without taking questions. Your thoughts on that, and I mean, I guess your initial gut reaction as to what you saw Tony Romo when he gave his little press conference, and where does he go from here, or where do you think he should be next year, or what do you think the future holds for Tony Romo?
Well, they're hoping he comes to the Jets in New York, I can tell you that. But if I'm Tony Romo, I stay far away from the New York Jets. I think a good landing spot, depending on what you think of what they think of Simeon in Denver, a great landing spot for him would be Denver, because he would be an upgrade over Manning of last year, Osweiler of last year, Simeon of this year. I mean, imagine the Broncos. I'm not going to say they're the 2000 Ravens, but imagine the Broncos like the 2000 Ravens with an excellent quarterback. And he's an excellent quarterback, whatever you think of him. Can he stay on the field? And that's a different question. But if I'm him, and look, the thing that bothered me about that whole thing was there were reports behind the scenes that he went to Jerry Jones and asked for a chance to compete for the starting job and was told no. I don't know how you compete for the starting job with a guy who won 7, 8, 9 in a row. This isn't training camp. So if it was training camp, you'd have an argument. But the guys, all these guys got big egos, as they should. But he did the right thing publicly, outwardly. What he did behind the scenes is a different deal. But it doesn't matter what he does. He's the number two quarterback, and if this guy doesn't get hurt, Dak Prescott, he'd have to fall off a cliff to lose the starting job at this point. You know, they'd have to lose four games in a row or something, which isn't going to happen.
I was going to say, being the backup in a good spot, you're only one play away from being the starter again if Prescott gets hurt. And, but I agree. I think he did the right thing publicly. And, I do like him. I think he's a good guy. I think he's an excellent quarterback when healthy, but that's the big asterisk with Tony Romo. You mentioned Seattle, the best team in the NFC, clearly the best team in the NFC now, 7-2-1, a win over the – I think they're a train wreck on the road, the Eagles. They're quite a different team at home, but can't get out of their own way. I always thought they were bereft of talent, so I think 5-5 is impressive considering the talent that they – trot out every week, especially the wide receivers. They gave up 300 yards in the first half to the Seahawks. They had a huge penalty by Nelson Aguilar negating a Zach Ertz long touchdown that could have kept the game close. Big momentum shift, and Aguilar again continues to not produce, and then he went on a little diatribe of his own about how he's mentally so out of it, and I don't quite get how you get back into it. You need to be confident, but he's just, he has one or two drops a game. Seahawks roll. Russell Wilson was his amazing self doing what he does. He even caught a touchdown pass, for God's sakes, from Doug Baldwin. Your thoughts on I know what we think of the Seahawks, and they kind of did what we thought they would do, but the Eagles, and specifically, and you can point to, and I just did, Nelson Aguilar's mistakes and the continuing decisions or non-decisions of Doug Peterson. But I think Carson Wentz has regressed in another game with two interceptions. He had opportunities, easy throws that would have been easy touchdowns, and he sailed the ball on a couple plays in the fourth quarter. Were we wrong to kind of coronate Carson Wentz as a franchise guy going forward? Should we take a step back? What are your thoughts on Carson Wentz at this point?
Yeah, I don't think we said he was a franchise guy, but he certainly played a lot better the first three games than he has the last seven. But I will say this, and I know you're a Philly guy and Philly guys are tough on the Eagles, but I was more impressed with the Eagles in this defeat than I was with the Giants in there. We almost lost the game to the Bears, and we'll get into that later. But with respect to the Eagles, I was very impressed with them because, it's interesting, the cover the tackle rule, which Phil Simms actually went into, it was very interesting because he said the refs, if the tight end is on your side, which the tight end was not on Aguilar's side, if the tight end is on your side, the refs will give you a little leeway, but if it's a tackle, they won't give you leeway. But what was interesting to me, I don't think it was Peterson, I think it was... Was it the line coach or the wide receivers coach? Was it literally, you saw the film at the top of the screen. He was literally yelling at Aguilar to move up. The problem with that is if what Phil Simms is true, if sometimes they let you slide and sometimes they don't, it was pretty clear once the guy's yelling at Aguilar that the ref is going to call it because the ref is a foot away from him. So I don't know if he would have let it slide. I don't know if they let it slide. As discussed, this rule bothers me. I know it's a 100-year-old rule, but it bothers me because it has nothing to do with the game. You're not fooling anyone. In that particular case, as the ball went to the other side of the field for a touchdown, and that really did change the game. I am not saying that the Eagles would have won because the Seahawks, in my mind now, are 100% offensively. Their line, which was rated 31st in the league, is getting better. Tom Cable, the former coach of the Raiders, is the offensive line coach and doing an unbelievable job with these guys. And Russell Wilson is obviously 100% now because they sent him out for a pass. You know, if he couldn't run, they would have never run that play two, three, four,
That's
five
crazy.
Weeks ago. So I kind of saw it. Obviously against the Patriots, and look, the Seahawks are always the second half team. I'll be surprised. I don't even know their schedule, but once you beat New England in New England, I'll be surprised if they lose another game the rest of the regular season. But I am not down at the Eagles at all. In fact, I like them this week because I thought they performed well, but Carson Wentz, I think you have to look at him now as a game manager and certainly not a franchise. But again, I don't think we went that far, but he was very impressive the first three games. And maybe some coaches put the film in like you do with a batter in baseball. You watch 50 at-bats. Maybe they put the film in after three games and they found some stuff that they can take advantage of, and now he's going to have to make the adjustments. But I like the Eagles. They're now in the wrong division. Again, I thought the NFC East would be bad, but they're now in the wrong division because if you're 5-5 in the North, you're a game out of first. If you're 5-5 in the South, you're a game out of first. If you're 5-5 even in the Seattle division, you're in second place. So sometimes, like the Browns, I understand they have no wins, but they're eternally, to me, in the wrong division. So sometimes they're in the wrong division, and it's shaken out now the Eagles, again, after 3-0, so now 2-5. But I thought they played well against Seattle, and to go into Seattle and be competitive. And I thought they were, again, put that touchdown in, it's a different game. I don't think they win, but it's a different game.
On that play, let me ask you, because I thought the same thing when they showed the replay and Peterson and Greg Lewis are saying, get up to the line. I'm thinking, the ref is, the side judge is standing right in front of you, so you're tipping it off if he happens to miss it.
Exactly.
One, don't do that. And two, maybe use a timeout, Doug, to reset. But is there any chance, because I know the refs sometimes might, you know, say, and I know they do it to the players, hey, move up, move up, move back. Any chance that he pointed it out to the sideline and said, your guy needs to move up a half a yard?
Oh, well, if he did, then he should have called timeout once the guy didn't move.
Right.
Because obviously he didn't move.
He didn't move, and he was criticized heavily this week. And no one asked him if the ref tipped him off, but because I thought it was crazy that they're saying move up with the ref standing in front, just like you did. But Doug Peterson was hammered a bit in this town for not using the timeout, and his explanation was just as bad as – you know, trying not to give the ball back to Tom Brady in the Chiefs playoff game last year. And it was, you know, he's becoming under a lot of scrutiny. Nelson Aguilar, you know, I know we're hard on the team here. I didn't expect much from them. I thought they did compete. There's just too many breakdowns at times where it could change the game. And I know everyone says in this, well, they're only a few, if you listen to Sports Talk Radio, they're only a few plays away from being, you know, 9-1. Yeah,
well,
but good teams make those plays, you know, and they have been competitive. They haven't gotten their doors blown off like they have in previous years. Last year at this time, they were getting smoked by Detroit on Thanksgiving. Washington won the division on Lincoln Financial Field. They lost a big lead to Miami, and they got torched by Jameis Winston. He threw 5 touchdown passes in the first half at Lincoln Financial. They're competitive. I agree. I think they need help at the wide receiver position, and you know, Doug Peterson still needs to get, you know, his legs under him a little bit with some of his game management. But again, we're critical here. You're right. We are very critical here, and I watched the Giants game as well. You mentioned that they were down 10 points in the first quarter, and you know, I was flipping around and doing some things, and I hosted a Thanksgiving dinner, so I didn't see everything. Turned it back on. They're up 22-16. Tell me why you weren't that impressed with how the Giants played. And by the way, that's 7 wins this year by a combined total of 27 points for the G-Men.
Right. Which again, if you're a Giants guy like I am, you know that is the exact opposite. I mean, they lost so many close games, and Tom Coughlin must be, like, pulling his hair out because they lost so many close games, and they've turned it around. But, you know, it was a bizarre game, and I will say this. If this Zach Miller – now, they're already playing without Alshon Jeffrey, and whatever you think of Cutler, he's playing hurt. You know, he has a torn labrum now. He might be out for the season. In the middle of the game, there's Zach Miller, who's killing the Giants – down the seam for a touchdown. I think he had like 3 catches for 60 or 70 yards. I don't know the exact number.
Yeah,
he breaks
61
his foot.
Yards.
He breaks his foot. And once he's out of the game, then they had nobody to go to. They didn't have their number one who was already there. They didn't have the tight end who was killing them. And look, I'm a Giants guy, but if this guy, Miller, doesn't get hurt, I think Chicago wins that game. Throw in Robbie Gould against his old teammate, missing two extra points. Now, having gone to a lot of games in Giants Stadium, and you know the legendary wind on the East Coast this Sunday,
yes,
I mean, you couldn't
yes.
walk down the block. So I'm not
yes.
criticizing Robbie Gould. He's a great kicker. Obviously, he was cut because he's not as good, and I don't know what you can really expect of him as a Giant. He's been okay, but he misses two. Their guy misses one. You know, it was the all-time record, which I want to talk
yes.
about later, the all-time record. But the all-time record, they moved it back, you know, last
yeah,
year.
Right?
So let's be
of
careful
course.
With the all-time record. But the Giants played well enough to win. Jason Pierre-Paul is playing better, had a big strip sack. Landon Collins is playing like an all-pro, you know, another big interception. But I was not I am serious when I say this. I was more impressed with the Eagles, the way they played in Seattle, counting that big play, which, again, the penalty had zero to do with the play. I mean, if the guy walks
zero.
Up half a yard, they've got a big touchdown and it's a game. I'm not saying they win.
Yes.
But I was more impressed with the Eagles' effort in Seattle. There's going on the road, and then there's going to Seattle or going to New England. Those are two different road games to me. And the Giants playing at home against a totally depleted. Now, you know, what are the Bears going to do next week? You know, they have no Alton Jeffrey. They have no Zach Miller. They have no Cutler. I mean, where are they going?
Yep.
So, and look,
they're
I'm not a big
nowhere.
Cutler fan, but I don't think he's a wimp. I think he's a tough guy. I think he plays hurt. He makes some incredible throws. I mean, during that game, he made some incredible throws into the wind. So,
he
but,
did.
You know, Chicago, I feel it would be bad to be a Bears fan. Just going back to the Eagles quickly, I think the other problem in Philly is they're now 5-5, and the fan base can see after a 3-0 start where they were pleasantly surprised, they see it slipping away because they are in the wrong division. Again, if they're in two other divisions, they're a game out, and despite all this, they still have a chance. And again, I was impressed with the way they played. Maybe you weren't. But I think that's the other problem. You see the year, even the wild card opportunities, which might now both come out of the NFC East. So if the Cowboys
yes.
win and the Giants and the Redskins, you know, make the playoffs, you know what everyone in Philly is going to be saying. We should have had one of those two wild cards at least. So
yep.
I think that's a problem as well, having been there with the Giants in other years.
Yes, yes. And the other problem we have in this town is we're going to have to start rooting for the Cowboys soon because we're not catching the Cowboys. If you're
right.
an Eagles fan, I heard them
right.
talking about it on sports radio today that, you know, so the last game of the season might be meaningless if the boys already wrap up home field. And it's a tough pill to swallow, but, yes, we might have to turn into Cowboy fans around here. Let's talk real quickly about the other team in the NFCs we haven't touched on, you know, whooping up on the Packers, who are a train wreck at this point. Kirk Cousins, 3 TDs. He's kind of up for some money at the end of the year. Does he get Andrew Luck money at the end of the year at this point?
Unless they can franchise him again, because I think you have to be sold on Kirk Cousins. I don't even know what happened early in the year. I know they lost those two games, and you know I picked them to win the NFC East. But
yes,
I'm a Kirk Cousins
yes.
guy from the rookie year when RG3 forced his way back into the game. I thought Kirk Cousins could have won that playoff game when RG3 came back hurt, got hurt worse, and lost the game. I thought they had no chance to win with RG3, and I thought they had a chance to win with Kirk Cousins, who had played well in that game. So he's done nothing but answer the bell. I mean, 21 for 30, 375 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. I understand Green Bay is not good defensively, but those numbers are beyond, you know, 70% completion. As I say to you every year after the Redskins win, every week after the Redskins win a game, they started off 0-2 at home. They're 6-1-1 since then. The only team better is
yes.
the Cowboys. So
yes.
They're in the mix. They are a good team. And I think, yeah, I think he's in for a big payday. And I heard somebody say, if they give him the big payday now, which it's kind of hard to think they won't, again, unless there's an incredible collapse,
right.
they could have got him a lot cheaper this year than they're going to get him next year. That's
right.
the funny thing.
Absolutely.
And
yep.
I think he's
That's
confident
true.
Enough. You know, I think he's confident enough that even if they do it again, which would be really Bush League, you know, how are you going to go to Washington? How are you going to want to play in Washington if you do that to someone like Kirk Cousins the second year? You know, that's going to make people
Agreed.
Not want to be there.
Agreed. It's the chance you take. I want to talk a little bit about the AFC. When we're here with Steve Callis, Callis Remarks with Joe Stazak and Steve Callis on Sportsology. Last night in Mexico City – Raiders stage a comeback. Derek Carr, 2 touchdown passes in the fourth quarter, win and cover. They're 8-2, the Raiders are, along with those New England Patriots, 8-2. And I know you like the Raiders, and I do too. I'm completely unimpressed with the Texans every time I watch them. I don't know how they got to 6 wins this year. But your thoughts on the Raiders and how they keep going, and Derek Carr, obviously a candidate for MVP.
Well, I do have to say they were very lucky yesterday. And if you watch those replays, I don't know why you can't replay a sideline out call. I understand it's not reviewable. But I think, like with interceptions or fumbles, I think the call is the referees should, if they're not sure, they should call it an interception. They should call it a fumble. They should let the guy run by himself into the end zone, because once all of that happens, it's reviewable. And I think certainly with the newer replay with the fumble and the interception, I think they're more likely to call the turnover now. I'm not sure, but I think so. In your head, it has to be. If you know it's going to be reviewed if you call it this way, and you know it's not going to be reviewed if you call it the other way. I think here, too, because he was by himself, and I don't know that professional – no, it was very close. But it looks like he did not go out of bounds, DeAndre Hopkins. But you have to think that a professional wide receiver who's running down the sidelines by himself is not going to run out of bounds. I understand you're talking inches. But that's just – so it would have been just as easy for the ref alone there, when he sees what he thinks is the guy stepping on the out of bounds by a 16th of an inch, to just let him go into the end zone, because they're going to review it. And if he stepped out, they'll bring it back. But if you don't, if you call it, then you can't review it. That's stupid. And it's almost like the clear fumble rule. You know, years ago when they had the fumble and there was a clear recovery, but it wasn't called a fumble, you still didn't get the ball. They changed that rule. So now if there's a fumble after the review and a clear recovery by the other team, you now get the fumble. That was not true a few years ago. So they're still trying years later to kind of fix this, and I'm putting fix in quotes. But I think – I don't know that they would tell the refs that, but I think in the ref's mind there has to be – well, if I let them go to the end zone, they're going to review it. I'm not sure. You know, and they had a few other – look, Bill O'Brien was right. I mean, they had those – I'm not sure about the first – third and short, but the fourth and one, it looked to me like the guy was a half yard over the line. So I thought, and as you know, I picked the Raiders and I like the Raiders, but I thought they were very, very lucky to A, win, and B, cover. I thought it was incredible luck. And of course, the Texans had some incredible breakdowns, you know, on those last 2 touchdowns. Nobody was touched. I mean, Amari Cooper got the ball in the middle of 4 guys, ran 30 yards, nobody touched him. You know, those were touchdowns in two-hand touch. So I do like the Raiders. I'm a little, if you're looking bigger picture, I'm a little concerned about their defense. But certainly Derek Carr is a star. I thought he was becoming a star last year, and I think other people kind of saw it, but not totally. And this year, you know, there's no doubt about it.
Let's talk Patriots a little bit. The other team in the AFC, well, maybe the only team in the AFC that's really going to at least we think, make that run to the Super Bowl, because of, I guess, the lack of any other teams who can really challenge them, in my opinion. We mentioned the Raiders, and you mentioned their defense, and Tom Brady, if you have a weak defense, can make it a long day for you. Brady, 4 touchdown passes, going back home to Frisco. I know Frisco is kind of a train wreck, but 16 touchdowns, 1 interception. I know people say that, or some people have said, well, he missed the first 4 games, he can't be MVP. I don't agree with that. What are your thoughts on Brady right now and his shot at landing that MVP mark, and how the Patriots keep rolling along?
Yeah, I think he's in the mix for the MVP, because he's still going to play 3 quarters of the season. His numbers are like video game numbers. I have to say, in defense of the 49ers, you know, I almost picked them last week because of the backdoor cover aspect of the game. And I thought the 49ers at least had played well the week before at Arizona. I know Arizona's up and down, but on the road, the 49ers lost on a field goal at the buzzer, so I gave them a chance. Now, my son, who's living out in Oakland, went to the game in Santa Clara. I guess the Patriots played there when Brady was knocked out for the season in the first game, so Brady had literally never played where he grew up. My son said he thought more than half the crowd was Patriots fans, which, you know, the 49ers aren't going anywhere, but I guess the Patriots have fans all over. This was not, let's go from Boston to Cleveland like the game I went to watch them. This was obviously across the country, but my son thinks there's a lot of Patriots fans in the Bay Area, which makes sense because Tom Brady is from there as well. But in the 49ers' defense, again, it was 13-10 after three quarters. So I think the 49ers are at least playing okay. Their record's no good. They're not going anywhere. But the other thing my son said was he was there, and he said it was raining hard for three quarters of that game, and he thought if it wasn't raining hard that the Patriots would have even run it up more than they did at the end. So take that from at least a knowledgeable kid who was at the game. But, yeah, I don't think this doesn't make me back off of the Patriots. Makes me respect the 49ers a little more because, again, 13-10 after three quarters, played the Arizona to the final buzzer on the road. I'm not going to pick them this week against Miami because they're going across the country, and that seems to affect teams. Although they're asking you to pick them, the line I have is 7.5 Miami. And after the Miami Miracle cover, which we can talk about later, I guess, of last week with the Rams. You know, it's funny. Bill Belichick apparently hates Jeff Fisher. And the last time they played, I'm not a big gambler, but apparently if you look at all the games that Belichick has coached against Fisher, it's like brutal. He tries to run it up on him. And they haven't played in like 5 years, but the last game was in that snowstorm, and they won 59-0. You know, they were throwing the ball late in the third quarter. But when I sent my son a text about, you know, I picked the Dolphins, I like the Dolphins, but the Rams were winning 10-0, and then the Dolphins scored two touchdowns in the last, you know, 3.5 minutes. And my son just sent me back a text that said Jeff Fisher. So I guess he drinks the Patriots Kool-Aid, and he doesn't like Jeff Fisher either. But the Rams obviously have an excellent defense. You know, Jared Goff, I guess we should talk briefly about him, was less than a game manager, you know. But look, you're throwing him. You know, the Dolphins have a good defense. It's the same. People in New York are calling for Petty to start against the Patriots this week, and I'm like, are you out of your mind? You're going to start Petty against Bill Belichick? So Fitzpatrick's going to start. People are upset about that because he's not going to be, you know, there next year. But I myself would wait till next week to start Petty. I don't care what Fitzpatrick does this week. But I think they're right in holding him back. And again, I don't know the entire Rams schedule, but to start Goff against a very good defense, you know, it's the old, you got to start him sometime, and everybody's been calling for him because they're not going anywhere, and they do have an excellent defense. But he was, 17 for 31 for 134 yards. The longest completion that he threw in the air, the ball in the air, went 7 yards. So obviously they had him on a short leash. And one other quick great stat. He's the 10th straight overall number one pick quarterback to lose his first game. 10 in a row. The last one to win was David Carr, who will now only be known, I think, forever as Derek Carr's big brother,
Derek Carr's brother.
But David Carr in 2002 won his first start. I can't even tell you who it was against. But just another interesting stat. But look, you got to get him some reps, and the Dolphins' defense is not, you know, Seattle's defense, for example. So I think they got to do what they got to do. But it was a miracle cover. And give the Dolphins credit. You know, they were down 10-0, and they played – they played well 4 minutes. Tannehill was terrible until, you know, the last 4 minutes, frankly.
That's a 60-minute game. My father always told me that. And they did. They pulled it out. And I guess this is the beginning of the Jared Goff era. We shall see. Dak Prescott, obviously, the rookie of the year so far. Let's get to your picks because, again, I said one of us had a 5-0 week, undefeated. That would not be me. That would be you. So let's go over your picks last week, and let's see if we can ride the hot hand this week.
Well, all I can say is it's about time for the record. But, just everything fell right. Look, the Steelers over the Browns, and I respect the Browns. You know, I was thinking of taking them this week against the Giants. But, again, if they don't get that defensive touchdown very late in the game, the Steelers – you know, yep. they win 17-9, they don't cover. So the Steelers had a good but fortunate cover. The Dolphins, to me, had a miracle cover. The Raiders, to me, had a – look, I went 5-0, I'm not complaining, but the Raiders
right.
had a referee-aided – and, you know, I've been on this show saying, yeah, but if they had done this, that, or the other thing. So, you know, things broke well. Washington, I really liked against the Packers. And the Seahawks over the Eagles, I'll say it again, I really like the Seahawks. They're taking – the place of the Patriots is my automatic pick every week, but put that touchdown back on the board, and I'm just not sure how that game shakes out. Again, I don't think Seattle would have lost, but I do think it would have been much closer. And because of that, my picks this week, I'm going Eagles 3.5 over the Packers Monday night. The Packers have shown me nothing. The Eagles have shown me something. I know maybe not in Philly, but to me, they showed me something last week. On the road in Seattle and New England, the toughest places to play. If Nelson Aguilar walks up half a yard, it's a game. That's all I can say.
Yep.
I'm also going Broncos 3.5 over the Chiefs. I'm a little disappointed with the Chiefs. They lose to the Buccaneers at home. Alex Smith throws a horrific interception that Alex Smith never throws into the end zone when they were down 2. So, all you know, yep. if he just doesn't throw an interception, they at least take the lead. It would have been almost like an old extra point, not a new extra point field goal. So I like the Broncos at home, 3.5 over the Chiefs. I'm staying with the Seahawks now. They're playing at the Bucs, and the Bucs are playing better. But I think the Seahawks are just steamrolling everybody now. They're a 5.5-point favorite on the road. I was thinking about taking the Browns. I just can't do it. They're getting 7 from the Giants, but I just can't do it. And I was thinking about taking the 49ers because I do think they've improved the last few weeks. But, again, these teams that fly across the country and they're, you know, the visiting team, I stay away from them. So I'm just going Seahawks 5.5, Broncos 3.5, Eagles 3.5, Monday Night Football. How about you?
Interesting because I have a couple rules, at least when I used to play. One, don't bet against the Patriots. And two, when you bet bad teams, bad things tend to happen. So I've taken the Browns occasionally. In fact, I took them last week, and I was looking at Frisco too this week, and like you did, but I have to try to rein it back and learn from my history. But I believe I went 2-1 last week. I got the Ravens plus
yes.
7 over the boys, and they had a 7-point lead, and they ended up losing by 10. You know, give the Cowboys credit, 27-17. I believe, and again, I'm looking at my sheet. I think I had the Bucs over KC plus the points. Did I have the Bucs last week?
Last week you had the – no, you had the Bears getting 7 from the Giants, so you can thank Robbie Gould for that. You had the Vikings pick 'em over the Cardinals, which I thought was an interesting pick. I was not sold on the Vikings, but they did get the win, and you had the Ravens. So, yeah, 2-1. Nothing wrong with
okay,
that.
Okay, so 2-1. This week I'm going with the Steelers. The Steelers are laying a lot of points in Indianapolis, and I don't know if that line is telling anyone something. Initially I was like, well, that's a lot of points. I like home dogs, but I'm going with Pittsburgh on that one, playing the other side of that. I like the Skins and the getting points in Dallas on Thanksgiving. That, you know, even when you know, one team is that much better than the other, and I don't know that they are this year, but that's a lot of points, 7 points, and that's the rivalry in the NFC. So I know the
right.
fans
You're
like
right.
to think Dallas is their rival, but Dallas is like, yeah, right. It's Washington, guys. So one of my other rules is I didn't do it last week, but I'm taking the Pats minus the 7.5 over the Jets. You know, and we shall see. We shall see how it goes.
Yep.
But congratulations on a 5-0 week, my friend. That is impressive on any level. I want to talk baseball a little bit and wrap up the season. Awards were given out. Local boy Mike Trout wins the MVP of the AL. Chris Bryant wins Rookie of the Year last year, and then he wins MVP in the NL. I think it was well-deserved. Talk to me about some of the other winners that you agree with, didn't agree with, and, of course, then there was the Kate Upton debacle with the Cy Young and the AL. Your thoughts on the awards?
Well, look, Trout's the best player in baseball. My concern always for the MVP is that times they give it out to the MOP, they gave it out to the most outstanding player, they gave it out
right.
to the best player. The Angels were bad. And I know it specifically says you can vote for someone who doesn't win, but in this expanded era of so many teams making the playoffs. I really don't think you can give it to a guy who comes in fourth place. And I love Trout. He is the best player in baseball, the best all-around player in baseball. He's unbelievable. But I have this MOP. I've written articles about it. Ernie Banks, back-to-back in the late 50s, the Cubs were a second-division team, as they used to say back then, if you were in the bottom four.
Yes, when you were
in the
bottom. That's old school. I love that.
Yeah, Andre Dawson, I think they came in last. A-Rod with Texas, that was a total joke. I wrote a whole article about A-Rod. When A-Rod showed up to Texas with that absurd, huge contract, I think the year before he was there, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I have them in the articles, which you might even be able to find if you Google Steve Callis or go to stevecallis.com or Google Steve Callis and Rodriguez. You'll find a lot of articles because I covered that arbitration they had in New York City from a legal perspective. But I think when he was there, they like won 72 games the year before, and then they won like 73, 74, 72. They were all in the low 70s all 3 years A-Rod was there. So he hits 56 home runs, and he gets the MVP because he's the MOP. So
yes.
I just find that ridiculous. If you want to call it the MOP, that's okay with me. Call it best player in
sure.
each league. Call it the most outstanding. But don't tell me A-Rod or Andre Dawson or Ernie Banks, you know, let's play two, and great for him, great player. Don't tell me they were the most valuable player. And I always go back to when Ralph Kiner was leading the league in home runs every year and Pittsburgh Pirates were terrible. I read a story about Branch Rickey, who was actually the Pirates GM before he went to the Dodgers and had all the Jackie Robinson teams. And Kiner told the story when he was doing the Mets games in New York. He said, yeah, I went in once. I led the league in home runs. I went into Branch Rickey, and he didn't want to give me a raise. And I said, I just led the league in home runs. And Branch Rickey said, we came in last with you. We can come in last without you. So that's cold and that's mean and it's cruel, but it makes my point. Was Ralph Kiner the best player in the league? Well, maybe he was. He was certainly the best offensive player in the league. But was he valuable? You're not remotely valuable to the team that comes in last with you or without you, even if you win 10 more games. That's my only point. Bryant, I like Bryant. I might have voted for Murphy because Bryant's great. Don't get me wrong. And Rizzo
sure.
had a great year. My point is Bryant had a lot of help. Murphy was supposed to get his help from Harper, and Harper was a disaster this year. And
yep.
I wrote an article 2 or 3 years ago, or both years, don't trade Murphy, Mets. Don't trade Cologne. They kept Cologne. They couldn't give him away a few years ago. And whatever you think of Cologne, he's a Brave now, but whatever you think of Cologne, he was like, I'm not going to say the star of the staff, but he was the innings eater of the staff who won a bunch of games. So,
yeah.
So too with Murphy. You know, 3 years, $37 million for Murphy after that playoffs he had last year was not a lot in today's world. So they got Neil Walker, and he did a good job. He got hurt at the end of the year. They re-signed Walker for 1 year. But if you had Murphy, I didn't think he was going to hit 349, but I thought he'd have more power. He's become, whatever the Met fans say, he's become an adequate second baseman, maybe a little better than average. And he was the star of that team. So I think you could have given it to Murphy only because he didn't get any help. And Bryant, as good as he was, got a lot of help. The one guy I want to talk about, and I know this will probably be the last week for baseball, but the one guy I do want to talk about, and Kate Upton, look, she can write whatever she wants. It's America. But it's almost like the crassness of America has even gone to the Kate Uptons of the world, you know, to write that with an expletive. You know, you can write anything you want on Twitter. But, you know, do I think Porcello was better than Verlander? You know what I'll say? I'll say the Tampa Bay guy who sent in his ballot 2 weeks early, which he admitted to doing, he should never be able to vote for Cy Young again. You got to be a moron. You have to be a moron to – it's a 162-game series. So you send in your MVP ballot or your Cy Young ballot after 150 games. You're a moron. So
agreed.
I think he might have been the difference where Kate would have been happy. Should Verlander have gotten it? Well, he did get the most first-place votes, but as you know, that doesn't win. Porcello, it's hard to argue with him. The guy I would make a case for, and you might laugh at me, but I heard I heard a great defense of Zach Britton, who I understand relievers still don't get the respect, even with the greatness of Mariano Rivera for all those years. They get respect, but they don't get as much respect as they deserve. Buck Showalter made the greatest argument for him, and he said, not only because he wasn't even named to the final in the Cy Young, not only should he have been named to the final three for the Cy Young, He should have been named to the final three in MVP. Now, I won't go that far, but I'll just give you these stats. Zach Britton was 47 for 47 in save opportunities. He had 43 straight appearances where no runs were scored. His ERA of 0.54 is the lowest in the history of Major League Baseball for anyone who's thrown more than 65 innings. And when you have those arguments, I mean, he should have at least been named a finalist, that's all I'll say. And you could have given it to him, although, again, Porcello had an excellent year, and Verlander was great. You know, remember Verlander at the beginning of the year was bad, and he actually said, he sent out a tweet, it's coming back now, I can feel it coming. And since he sent that tweet, he was unbelievable. So I think Kate Upton has a point, but it really goes back to that Tampa Bay rider. And for some reason, the other Tampa Bay rider didn't put Verlander on his ballot either, which is kind of, I don't know if those two guys had a conversation. I don't know if the other guy voted early. He didn't comment. But again, to send in your MVP vote, I always thought, you know, the 1960 World Series where the Yankees were upset, the greatest Yankee team ever, was upset by the Pirates in seven games. Mazeroski hit the home run. You know, they gave Bobby Richardson the MVP. And the second baseman of the Yankees. My whole life I thought that they voted like in the fifth inning of the last game before the Pirates won. So I don't know if that happened. I could never find out. I actually tried to research it. But, you know, how can you give the MVP? Again, you can give the MOP. Maybe Bobby Richardson was the best player in that World Series. But I don't know if I talked too long on this topic, but I really get upset when you give the best player award, you give the most valuable player award to the best player. That's a different award in my book. But again, I gave you four or five examples that they've had over the years.
Well, we have about 5 minutes left. Let me ask you a couple things about the rules and should have, would have, could have, should be changed, maybe whatnot. But it is what it is right now. But I have no problem with Porcello winning. I'm looking, you know, I looked at his numbers, and I thought the Sox were great when he started, and in like 27 of his 33 starts, he gave up three runs or less, and 16 of them two runs. He was great. He was great.
Right.
3.15 ERA. I mean, Verlander was 3.04. I mean, he's just great all the time. But 16-9 versus 22-4. I have a problem. I know I get Kate Upton's point, and I agree with that. Verlander got the most first-place votes. Now, despite what you think about either one, if you get the most first-place votes, I know how they tally it up. Do you think that should be changed at all?
Well, it's happened a few times before. Originally, they said, oh, it's never happened, but it has happened before. But I think there's just I don't know if you can just have writers vote for one spot. Now, I think in the MVP voting, it goes like 10 spots. That might be too much. I think in the Cy Young, they vote for five. And I just don't think it can be one. Maybe one, two, three, you'll tell me. But I just don't think you can have just first place votes. Because, guys, you know, you can have the example where a guy had 10 first place votes and the second guy had 9 first place votes, but he had many more second place votes. I don't know if that's ever happened. But I don't think you can just, if the question is, do you just give the writer, just give me one name for the Cy Young winner, I don't really think that's right either, because there can be a closeness of vote. Although you are right, in this case there really wasn't. Verlander had you know, a few more. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it wasn't like one more first place vote. He had a number
days,
of first place.
14 days.
Yeah, and that's a big difference. So
big
you
difference.
Can make a case, but it all goes back to these two Tampa Bay guys. One of whom admitted he was a moron. I mean, again, he should never vote again for the Cy Young.
I agree.
Or the Cy Young, the baseball writers who make the rules are morons, because they should say you cannot vote until after the 162nd game.
Agreed.
If he mailed in a Cy Young vote with 2 weeks left in the season, they should have mailed it back to him and said,
agreed,
the season's not over yet. So, as always, when you get into the weeds on these things, there's always screw-ups. But you never get into the weeds on these things until there are screw-ups, and here's just another example.
Well, now, let me ask you this. We only have about a minute and a half left. Do you think – I probably know what you're going to say, but they end the voting. It's all only based on the 162-game season because only a certain amount of teams make the playoffs, but – I mean, you look, I mean, to me, it's the body of work of the whole thing, and you can see like a Clayton Kershaw doesn't pitch well in the postseason, and some guys do not step up in the postseason, and maybe Joe Maddon has a much better series than, Dave Roberts got knocked out earlier. So do you think at all it should ever be the whole thing and voting should be done, including the playoffs?
Yeah, I've thought that for a long time, frankly. I thought Maddon should have gone on the regular season. He was penalized because the Cubs were supposed to be the best, and they were the best.
Well,
but,
I agree with you. I mean, 103, but, I mean, come on.
And you don't give – see, I don't have a problem with the MVP award because you're giving out an MVP of the World Series, for example. But you're not giving out the manager of the year or the pitcher of the year or whatever. So
right.
I guess you could, but then I think the only problem with that is the winners would be obvious. You know, whoever wins the World Series is probably going to be the manager
yes.
of the year in each league. Although I agree that Francona should have been the manager. I thought Maddon should have been the manager of the regular season. But you are penalized if your team is supposed to be real good. And I think Dave Roberts did a good job, and they did beat the Giants, which is always that death struggle. And
sure.
they did a lot of it without Kershaw in the regular season. So I understand why he got it, but if you're supposed to be the best team and you win 103 games, it's like you don't get credit for it. Now, I don't think Maddon, you know, my son, who's a big Maddon fan, complained to me, and I said, look, Maddon doesn't care. He won the World Series. And I believe that because Madden's that
I
kind
agree.
Of guy. He also won it two or three times at Tampa because he is a great. I thought he was a Hall of Fame manager before he won. This puts him in the Hall of Fame for sure. But if you watch him in Tampa, again, Yankees, Tampa, you know.
Cozy up, because Now TV is all about the drama. Let Anthony Hopkins introduce you to Westworld's charming killer hosts. And I'm simply dying to see season 7 of Fox's The Walking Dead. Feeling the chill? Get steamy, catching up on The Affair before it returns. Search Now TV for the latest shows and over 250 box sets, all with no contract. Now TV, now you can.
18 plus, UK only. Month passes auto-renew. Cancel at any time. Full terms at nowtv.com.